Well, welcome to the situation report for Tuesday, February 25th. And I am still in Twitter jail. So I figured BTO taking care of business was an appropriate song for today because it's impossible to do that with all the censorship that's still going on. It cracks me up that so I was censored slash put in Twitter prison. Because I told Larry Fink to go self-eliminate because he's a dick. But that said, I am still there until, I don't know, 5 days, 6 days left, some bullshit number. So it's been interesting trying to get things to work. But that said, there is a lot going on. So if you haven't watched the latest with Bracken and Mike Ferris, you should do that because Bracken, just like Chris, I think it's Chris Miller, we're talking about gold and they're trying to move your eye line off of Bitcoin right now, right? I'm not a crypto guy. Let me just get that out of the way. For all you crypto guys out there, this is not a conviction of crypto. This is not a conviction of your belief system in crypto. This is me saying I'm not a crypto guy. And I'm not a crypto guy, and I never bought into something that's just ones and zeros. I'm a real asset guy, shit I can touch. And in this case, Bitcoin dropped, you know, what, 10 grand, 10%, I don't know. And to me, it's always been a pump and dump scheme anyway. And that their eye line has been on gold and hard assets. And Catherine Austin Fitz she's done several interviews where she talks about they want to trade Bitcoin for real assets so they can make billionaires into trillionaires. That's how the rich work, right? If somebody wants to be the top dog, who has the most money? I mean, they'll never spend that money in 10 lifetimes, but it's not about that. Matt Smith, thanks, Mike. The point is that they're trying to get your eye line off of the crypto side, trying to get your eye line off of the Epstein stuff, trying to get your eye line off of the situation that's in Ukraine as well as what's going on in Gaza, because they want to get your eye line onto gold. They want to get your eye line onto Epstein and the things that, you know, don't really matter, right? So they were supposed to release Epstein, you know, the day that Glenn Beck, the day by the afternoon that Cash Patel gets in office, he's going to release all the Epstein stuff. All right. Born in Friday, we're on day two, still no release of the documents. You know why? Because the FBI was hard at work destroying all of that evidence that implicates Israel while we speak, probably still doing it. So I don't expect the Epstein release to happen anytime soon. And there's lots of people posted about it, Ian Carroll, et cetera, et cetera. But there is an interesting narrative that is developing. And the interesting narrative that I see developing, and Mike Ferris and I were talking today, you know, that is before the four-legged landscaping crew decided to disrupt my entire afternoon by chewing on metal lights. They're setting up, so Trump's created an existential crisis for himself. And for those of you listening to my Substack today, you can turn off for the next 4 minutes. He's created an existential crisis for himself. He's told the public that he's going to release the Epstein, the RFK, the JFK, the Martin Luther King, all the information, all the documents. All those documents lead back to Israel. They all lead back to Mossad. They all lead back to this, you know, the Jewish mafia. They all lead back to AIPAC. So how exactly do you do that without implicating what, you know, most of the people he surrounded himself with believe in, which is, you know, the Zionist Jewish state has to survive at all costs. And okay, that's the talking point. That's the battle cry that you have to say to in order to get the administration. I don't see that working out well for them, because they need a fall guy. They need a scapegoat to say, see, it was this guy. Because that's how the game's played, right? There could be 1,000 people that are on the take, 1,000 people committing treason, but they'll zero in on one or two people and they'll say, these are the guys that did all of it. They'll do a show trial. They'll have lots of spectacle, lots of drama. They'll put that person behind bars. They'll say, see, everything's fine. Go back to what you're doing. I don't see that happening right now. What I see is a narrative being created around Netanyahu through social media and some of the quotes that he said for the past, 30, 40 years, because he's been in business for almost 30 years. And he's literally saying that, he's responsible in so many words. That's how the memes are being posted on social media. And if you go back to what I've been talking about social media and how AI has been used to have conversations as well as it used to be algorithms, but now it's AI that has full-fledged conversations across social media, they're crafting a narrative to make Netanyahu the fall guy. And if you think about it, it's the perfect cover because you throw him under the bus, most of the Jewish population wants to get rid of him. Most of the Arab population wants to get rid of him. Solve the problem of Gaza, you solve the problem of trying to go head to head with Iran, which nobody wants to do, not even Iran, and then replace him with somebody more moderate, you go back to business as usual. That's how I see that developing. Whether or not I'm right, it doesn't really matter. That's how I see the narrative being developed. Whether it comes true or whether they switch narratives, I don't know. But if I go back to Netanyahu here in the White House, not even 2 weeks ago, and his body language when Trump said, we're going to own Gaza, that's a dude that was surprised, that heard something completely different than what they had talked about in private. And it also tells me that there's a bigger fight going on right now. And when I take a step back from all of it, I see three very distinct narratives. One of them is that Netanyahu is the source of all evil for most of the Middle East. The second one is that Netanyahu said he's going to use the U.S. like a cow and milk the cow dry and then get rid of the cow. And all that lines up with a narrative that, shifts in the favor of, hey, this guy is really the problem. That way, Trump doesn't have to declare AIPAC a foreign lobby. He doesn't have to declare Israel an enemy of the U.S., a non-ally. Because when you trace back all of the blackmail operations and you trace back all the influencing operations, AIPAC has paid off a lot of people. They control a lot of U.S. congressmen. Whether you want to believe that or not, that's the truth. And everybody knows it in D.C. Ask Thomas Massie, his wife was killed by those guys. So they still have a lot of power in D.C. Do you honestly think that they're going to let the Epstein tapes out before they scrub them of any reference back to Israel? And Alan Dershowitz was on doing yeoman's work last night on a podcast saying that there's no way Mossad was behind any of this and that Epstein acted all by himself. Okay, so you have a Jew talking about other Jews. And he's gonna out them and say they were behind this. Yeah, I don't think so. And he was Epstein's lawyer. So either way that goes, you're not gonna see any association of Trump on the airplane. You're not gonna see any association with Israel. And you're definitely not gonna see any association with Mossad, even though Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a Mossad agent, a very well-known Mossad agent. So whatever bullshit they release, it's going to be watered down bullshit. So I would not get my hopes up on any of that. Along that same vein, there was a post today, and I think a lot of people missed it, that said there's a revolution building inside the intelligence community. You should be wary, as they're fighting back against Trump's overt suppression. Okay, well, that came out of Slate, so that was bullshit. Total hit piece. But I see two things happening with the intelligence agencies. Let's say that they walk everybody out of the building. And they walk everybody out of the building all at once. Where do you think they're all going to go? They're all going to go to MI6. They're all going to go to another intelligence service. They're not just going to walk away quietly. So they're also building a narrative. At least this is what I'm seeing so far. I may change my mind on this in 24 to 48 hours as it develops. But they're really making a case that the intelligence community is fighting back against Trump, and that Trump is going to face stiff resistance from the intelligence community. E.g., they're setting conditions for some kind of a terror to activate the terrorist cells that Sarah Adams is talking about. Because she hasn't backed off the ledge on any of it. She's still doubling down that there's going to be some kind of mass terror attack here in the U.S. And if I'm following that logic and I'm following the narratives, I'm seeing them set conditions so they can conduct some kind of a cyber attack to take down infrastructure or whatever, and then conduct some kind of kinetic attack. Whichever way it plays out, they're trying to build the narrative for that. And the other thing that's going on, which I think is very interesting, is that the FDA is still passing regulations. Like one of them's mRNA vaccines for chickens, for bird flu, H5N1. They passed something today that takes semaglutide off the market in liquid form. If you don't know what semaglutide is, it's a peptide, and it's been used in a product. It's the product that they use is called Ozempic. And Ozempic is it's semaglutide that you inject into your fat cells, and it's been shown to have extreme results with certain people for weight loss. And they took it off the market today. So by May, you won't be able to get it from a doctor anymore, unless RFK comes and changes it. But it's interesting that RFK hasn't fired anybody since he walked in the door. And he hasn't banned mRNA vaccines. He hasn't stopped any of the FDA regulations. I would have gutted the FDA the day I got confirmed. Like, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Let's say some novenas and I'm going to hit the bus. And then go to the office and literally start writing orders to fire people. All of that should have happened on day one. The second thing he should have done after firing everybody is he should have, blocked all use of mRNA vaccines until there's a non-pharmaceutical funded peer-reviewed study that shows that it's not only dangerous, but yeah, it's toxic. But he hasn't done that yet. So like I said, I've seen several narratives building right now, and I'm seeing other narratives that aren't being built. And it tells me that they're trying to shift our eye line off of what's important. So don't shift your eye line off of the vaccines. Don't shift your eye line off of the conversation around Ukraine, because Ukraine is, he was going to solve that in a week, right? We'll see if he actually does it. I don't think he's going to do it. I think Trump's got his hands full. And really what we're watching is the conflict between WEF 1.0 and WEF 2.0 is what we're really watching. Because there's no difference in the shitbags on either side. They're all assholes, right? It's just what degree of asshole is on either side. And we're watching a dick-waving contest between a bunch of oligarchs. Because that's really who's running the show, right? I mean, let's face it. We have public figures that are privately held in public positions fucking Americans on a daily basis. So what exactly is going to change? Oh, that's right. On day two of the Trump administration, we got Larry Ellison and Scam Altman coming in talking about Project Oracle 2.0, where they're going to tell us what mRNA vaccines we should inject into our body so we can be complete slaves to a group of WEF 2.0 assholes. How is that different? I'm sorry, I think I missed the transition. So we're really not watching a change in the guard. We're watching a change in leadership with the same agenda. And the next thing they're going to roll out is a digital dollar. And this is where Mike and I had the conversation today was around gold, right? And I watched part of Matt's conversation. That's why one thing I love about Matt Brackett is the guy's wicked smart. right? You just tee up a topic. And if he's, you know, really researching, he's going to deep dive into it. And he's, his talking points are always spot on. And one of the things he said was, you know, they're trying to craft the narrative so that the average Joe is paying attention to gold. Why? Because they're going to break it off in everybody's ass in the Bitcoin market. And most average Americans don't understand the square root of shit about the economy, about hard assets, about how money's created, about wealth is created. They don't teach any of that in school. I mean, do you remember in school where they taught you how money's created? No, that's right. You don't, because they didn't teach it in school. By the time the 70s and 80s came around, they were dumbing it down so people didn't really understand how money was made. And unless you're born into it or you have a knack for it, most people don't break out of working for somebody else. Like I'm in the spot right now where I'm so fed up working for other people that I'm going to go do my own thing. Just even if I'm financially fucking destitute, I'm going to go do my own thing because I can't stand working for other people. I'm just done with it. I've been done with it. Today I hit max density with my tolerance for stupid and passive aggressive. But everybody needs to understand how money is created, how wealth is created, how businesses are created. We don't teach it in school. Why? Because liberals are all about teaching you how to be dependent on the system. And the whole system's designed to make you dependent and not have you think critically. Most people don't even know how to think critically. And look, I think the thing that most people need to realize is the transition that's happening right now is not a financial transition. It's not a leadership transition. It's a cultural transition. And you're seeing that play out in a number of different cultural spaces across the planet. But the biggest place you're seeing it is in blue cities. The only people coming out and taking to the streets right now are the fringe. You're seeing a representation of what was really, really pushing the extreme liberal agenda is the extremes. And there's very few of them. The mass protests, everything else, they were all funded by Act Blue. They were all funded by USA. They were all funded and they had paid provocateurs show up and create these riots. That's what the George Floyd riot was, right? It was a staged event with paid actors to create an emotional moment that would drive other people to the streets. And it had the desired effect. But now you're seeing the pendulum swing all the way to the other side, where the right has said, we're done kowtowing to political correctness, to DEI, to all of your pronouns, to whatever sexual preference you have. We don't care anymore. We don't care what you think. We don't care what your pronouns are. We don't care. We're going to go do what's right for the country. And we're going to do it regardless of what you have to say or how loud you're screaming. But if you go look at blue cities, most of them, it's a very small number of people protesting. It's the fringe, right? The whack jobs like the anarchists on the other side that want to tear everything down and live out of a fucking tent. It's the extremes. That's who was really bought into the agenda. Nobody else was. And if you look at demographically across the country now, there's a lot of former Democrats that are quote unquote Republicans. And that's just a label more than anything else. It means that culturally the country shifted to more conservative. Why? Because they are completely fed up with the 1%, the less than 1% having the loudest voice. And you will see over the next 6 months, you will see less and less of DEI. And it's still out there. Trust me. In fact, most of the job ads should say, if you're white, don't apply. Because there's still a lot of DEI nonsense out there. It takes about a year for businesses to shift away from it. Right? Remember ESG, environmental, social, and governance? It used to be ESGR, environmental, social, governance, and regulatory. But they concatenated it to just governance. And the other thing you're going to see too is you're going to see that the community, this whole nomenclature around LGBTQMOUSC, whatever the acronym is today, you're going to see that start to shorten and kick in too. Because let's face it, a good portion of the gay and lesbian community was not bought into the whole LGBTQ plus, you know, pedophiles, plus the transgender. And I have transgender, you know, trans friends, right, that I've worked with that I'm still very good friends with. They want no part of this. In fact, their exact words are, these are the fringe that think everybody is a different sex. And, you know, one of the most frank conversations I had with one of my friends was, and this person had gone through the surgery, like went out of country, did the surgery before it was a thing. And I remember sitting in a room, actually I was at dinner, and sitting across from the table, and this person's like, hey, you're the only person I didn't want to tell. I didn't know how you were going to react. And I'm like, it's your choice, your body. I said, just remember, when you do this, you can't undo it. You won't have any of the same sensations that you do now. You're going to cut off everything that was given to you, you know, by God. So you're going to have to atone for that at some point. You'll atone for it after the surgery, and then you'll atone for it on the other side. It's your choice. But, you know, I figure I'm going to work with the hands I'm dealt. It is what it is, right? So most of them, especially the fringe elements of the trans community, the thing that most people don't realize is that they're all hopped up on hormones, and it throws their entire body into chaos. And people don't realize just how much that affects people, right? So where I'm going with this is, you're already seeing the correction towards the conservative side. The next correction you're going to see is an extreme prejudice against any parent that castrates their child. Because that's where, let's call a spade a spade. You want to do a sex change on a kid? Guess what? That's castration. And there's a reason why the age of consent is 18. There's a reason why the age of consent went from the early teens to 18. Because let's face it, most males and females, a lot of females are very mature at 18, but a lot of males are not. And when you're, you know, under the age of 10, you don't know the square root of shit about sex. You don't know anything about sexuality. You don't even know what your identity is. You're still trying to figure out who you are. You're still trying to figure out how the world works, right? It's when you get to 18 that you think you know what's going on, but you really don't. And then when you get to be about 30, you stop being a shithead and you figure out your parents weren't as stupid as you thought they were, and they get a little smarter every day. And that's the reason why over the years we moved the age of consent to 18. Is it fair? No. Does it matter what the age of drinking is from 18 to 21? Yeah, it does. Because a 21-year-old makes a little bit better decisions when they're impaired than an 18-year-old. And you can make a lot of arguments either way, but there was a reason why all of these things were put in place. And now they want to unwind them all for no other reason than to groom children. So you're seeing that narrative shift the other way, because people are starting to wake up and realize that this isn't about, you know, sexual identity. This is about grooming children. And every day you're seeing more and more of that. So coming back to Trump's existential crisis, the reason why this is existential is that he's put all of his eggs in Israel's basket. Defend Israel at all costs. Israel's our greatest ally. Hama, hama. Right? We got it. You made the deal with the Israelis and AIPAC. You took the money. We got it. But the longer that this goes on, the longer that they stall, the longer that they obfuscate, the more the American public is going to turn on Trump. And it doesn't help that the new AG comes out on day 3 or day 4 and says, yeah, we're going to start implementing more stringent red flag laws. Like 2 days into Kash Patel being named the director of the FBI. And then, oh, by the way, he was given control of the ATF too. Now, I know Cash personally, and I know he's a good guy. But it's not Cash I'm worried about. It's post-Cash. It's post-Trump. It's post-Bondi. And I give Bondi 4 months max, and she'll be gone. I don't see her lasting very long. She's already pissing off people across Trump's base already. Because there's two things that Trump needs to get the memo on. One, the Second Amendment is sacred. And the people that put you in office are going to protect the Second Amendment with their lives. Number two, nobody wants to hear about warp speed. We don't want to hear about, you know, about vaccines. We want the vaccines off the market. We want the pharmaceutical companies held to account. The fact that Albert Bourla was in the White House last Thursday and was booed should tell you everything you need to know about what you should be paying attention to. So you can obfuscate as much as you want. You can delay as much as you want. But all roads are going to be back to lead back to Israel. And when they do, the American public are going to expect you to break ties within Israel and to let them sink or swim on their own. And then to declare AIPAC a foreign lobby and to hold every one of them to account for all of the blackmail ops, all the compromising of children, and the trafficking of children. Full stop. No other answer is going to suffice for your base. Because the problem you've created for yourself is you have an entire base that's wide awake to the corruption, to the problem of our generation, and they're not going to sit quietly by for another 4 years and get screwed over like they did the last 4 years. They will stand up this time, and they will bring the guns out. So you could put up whatever AI, pass whatever laws, you could use whatever AI to generate whatever stories in social media, but at the end of the day, the American people are going to see right through that, and they already do. So your choice is to do the right thing for the country or to keep honoring the deals you made with the Jewish lobby. But either way, you're going to be held to account. And that's exactly what you're hearing from your base. Whether you want to hear it or not my problem, but that's what you're hearing from the base. And the base is not happy. We did not put you in office so we could see Larry Ellison and Scam Altman coming to the White House to talk about some new AI project that we need to pay for after paying for all these illegals to come in the country. And oh, by the way, when are you going to turn the spigot off for all of these illegals that have been getting $5,000, $6,000 a month from the federal government? And oh, by the way, when are we going to see a judge impeached, especially some of these liberal judges that are clearly legislating from the bench? That's prosecutorial misconduct. That's judicial misconduct. You can take your pick of which infraction it is, and they should all be disbarred, not to mention jail for treason. That's what your base wants to see. We don't want to see all the pomp and circumstance and nonsense. We want to see where the money went, who the money went to, who enriched themselves, and then we want those people to go to prison. It's a very simple equation. There's not a lot of math here. And, you know, the fact that he surrounded himself with Zionists is not a good omen. And literally everyone, almost every single one of them has said the same thing. Israel is our greatest ally. I'm worried about protecting Israel. Every single one of them, Cash, Bondi, and now Dan Bongino. And I think it's very interesting that Bongino was put as the deputy director of the FBI. First of all, he's a former Secret Service guy. So he knows how the game's played. He knows how the agencies should work. He knows how the bureaus should work. He knows how the Secret Service should work. That to me is a good hire. And that to me says that Trump has made some good moves and put some good warriors in place, just like firing all of the Joint Chiefs and Barry McCaffrey, Barry McCaffrey. And I didn't realize he was so heavily invested in MSDNC, but he came out and said that, you know, these generals being fired is unprecedented and blah, blah, blah. These guys are all patriots. Go fuck yourself. These guys are all traitors. Every single one of these Joint Chiefs that's walking out the door had better get a good lawyer, because you're going to be tried for treason for what you did for not only to the troops, but what you did to this country by forcing and punishing people for not going along with the DEI nonsense. I don't want to hear you doing your job. I don't give a shit about that anymore. I want to see general officers stand trial for fucking treason and for what happened in Afghanistan. I am done listening to all these pundits talk about they get to retire. No, the people that got drummed out of the military didn't get a choice, so you don't get a choice either. You are going to stand trial for all the service members that have permanent injuries or died from the vaccines. Every single one of you, all the way down to lieutenant, colonel, and major that forced this in your battalion or your squadron or on your ship, you are going to be held accountable. There is no if, and, ors, or buts. And this is the other thing that Trump needs to get. When Borla was booed in the White House, that should tell you that your base is telling you loud and clear, this guy is an enemy of this country. What part of that did you miss? Don't tell me that you're afraid of the pharmaceuticals. And don't tell me that we need the pharmaceuticals. We do not. We can create all the drugs here that we need. We can create all the quote unquote vaccines that we need here. And we could do all the testing here. We don't need Big Pharma to do that. In fact, it's been way too long since Big Pharma was put back in their place. And I think turning them off of being able to advertise in the U.S., one, you'll see mainstream media roll up, especially Communist News Network. But at the end of the day, you're going to see Big Pharma go back to where they should be, which is back in the box. Now, I don't have any hope that Borla is going to be held to account for crimes against humanity, but that guy should. He should definitively be tried for crimes against humanity, and he should be executed publicly, along with all of his executives, the executives of Moderna, J&J. You can go down the list. Take your pick. They all need to be held to account. And Trump knows it. You can't tell me that Trump wasn't paying attention to that. But we're watching a stage play. I mean, some of these guys are characters. Like Luna talking about Pam Bondi hasn't released the FBI documents on Epstein. Well, let's see. Aren't you on the task force to declassify documents? Does that mean you have a direct line to the president? The president calls the AG and the AG releases the documents. Is that how that works? It rolls downhill. It's all a stage show. And to be honest with you, I haven't really paid attention to it. The thing I did pay attention to last week, which I think is very, very interesting, is that the CEO of Palantir sold $10 billion worth of stock. Let me tell you how that works, just so everybody understands how stock trades work at that level. So when you're an executive in a company, they issue you stock, you sign a document that says, I won't sell stock outside of the trading window. So there's a trading window every quarter where you can trade a certain number of stock. Like there's no provision in the contract that allows you to sell off all your stock, because they don't want you to manipulate or crash the stock price. So they give you a window where you can sell specific number of stock. It's basically the golden handcuffs. And you can't sell outside that window. You have to wait for that window. Doesn't matter what the stock market's doing. Doesn't matter what the stock's doing. That window is when you can buy and sell. And they publicize the window to all the executives in the company. And you don't sell stock, at least at that level, you don't sell stock past a certain amount. This guy sold $10 billion worth of shares of Palantir. I mean, the market went crazy, as it should. And there's laws against that, too, for stock manipulation, market manipulation. There's a host of things why you don't do that. But the point is that the trading windows are set up for a very specific reason. And, the whole point of having the stock anyway is long-term value of the stock. So you can retain the stock to a certain price, then you sell it off, et cetera. over time, right? That's the whole point of owning it. It's the long-term value of it. But to see this guy sell this much off and the board to allow it means either A, he's exiting the company, or he's anticipating some kind of a market correction or fluctuation. I would say that there's a market correction imminent, which is why the gold conversation is there, which is why the conversation is avoiding the cryptocurrencies, because they want to introduce a stable coin that's backed by gold or backed by assets within the US. That's what the sovereign wealth fund is all set up to do. And importantly, the sovereign wealth fund, in my mind, is going to replace the Federal Reserve system. And they're going to use the Federal Reserve until it's not useful anymore, and they're going to get rid of it. And I would say within the next 12 to 15 months, we will see that correction happen and a movement to some kind of revaluation of the dollar. I think they're trying to set up for some kind of a cryptocurrency here in the US or digital dollar. And they're going to back it with real assets. And the payoff for that is to let all these people that have bought into Bitcoin, as Catherine Austin Fitz says, and they sell off their Bitcoin and they buy real assets, and everybody who's still in the market gets screwed. That's the narrative as I'm hearing it. I don't know how true any of that is, but what I do see is I do see them taking our eye line off of the things that matter over to this gold. And you notice how it's all been talk, but nobody's actually gone down to Fort Knox to find out if there's gold there or not. So it's going to be a very interesting situation over the next several months as things develop. But here's what I will say about the current situation. Current situation is still very, very dangerous. And I think it's dangerous for a lot of reasons. You have a bunch of oligarchs in Europe, a bunch of oligarchs here that are duking it out for who's going to be in control. They all want control of the planet. They all want to triple or, be trillionaires, whatever their issue is. But what that equates to for us is you have one part of the system that would burn the system down so nobody can benefit from it. The other part of the system that would burn the system down in order to prevent the other side from burning the system down. And none of these people are rational in my mind. Musk is a lot of things. But if you look at Musk's track record and you read anything about what Musk has done just in his private life, you will be horrified to see a guy that you'll understand why I don't trust him. And when he came out and bought Twitter, you would see directly why I said what I said when he bought Twitter, which this is a reason to lure everybody back to mainstream social media so they could control the narrative, which is exactly what's happened. So this existential crisis has created an environment of even more danger than prior to the election. Do I think we're out of the woods in World War III? Yeah, I think we are. I think people have moved past that. But we aren't out of the woods for some kind of a either financial disruption, a infrastructure disruption, or even worse, some kind of a kinetic disruption. Those are all still on the table. And the more desperate that one side or the other gets, the more plausible a scenario may seem. But at the end of the day, the thing that all of us should be doing is we should be prepared. We should be using our stuff. We should be operating. And I'm going to say this again, travel heavy. I'm traveling heavy. When I leave my house, I have a firearm with me. I have ammunition. I have food and I have water. And God forbid, I've got emergency power with me. And it sounds like a lot, but if you talk to anybody that's weathered the storms, that's been listening to the roundtable crew for the last 2 years, you're going to hear people that are saying, yeah, we've been using our stuff and it helped us out when we needed it. Now's not the time to let down your laurels, especially when I see all these narratives heading us towards some kind of a financial disruption. And that brings me to my final point. There's still a lot of people that are completely oblivious to their surroundings. Completely oblivious. If there's one thing you can hear, if you hear me say tonight, hear this. Be situationally aware of everywhere you go, who should be around you, who doesn't, belong there, who shouldn't be there, and make eye contact with people. Look people in the eye. You can see a hell of a lot in a person if you look into their eyes and you can see what their intent is. You can see it clearly, especially that somebody's got a malevolent intent. You can see it. You can see the hate bleeding out of them. And it's not a natural act for most of us. Most of us avert our eyes. But we are primed for some kind of a disruption. And we're primed for some kind of a financial correction. They're telegraphing all of that. Whichever way this goes, the one thing I want for this audience is I want people just to be situationally aware and ready to go. And that doesn't mean kinetic. That could mean a lot of things. That could mean the grid goes down. That could mean traffic gets disrupted. There's some kind of choke points that are interdicted in whatever city you're in, and traffic comes to a standstill. Being able to navigate the ambiguity is what I want people to be able to do, to be the voice of reason. And it brings me back to Lawrence Gonzalez's book, Deep Survival, which, by the way, I reached out to him again today to see if I could get him on the show, because I want him to talk deep survival, what he learned. Accepting the situation you're in and making decisions will save your life. You'll see people in whatever situation. Look, when the grid goes down for longer than 48 hours, I could tell you that people lose their minds. I was in Washington State. There was a major storm back in, let's say, 92 or 93. Anyway, the state was out of power for there's parts of the state that were out of power for like 3 weeks. People lost their minds. After a week, after 3 days, people were already starting to lose it. After a week, people really lost it. And same thing with Texas. When Texas had that big ice storm that took out power across, you know, four major cities in the state, a lot of people lost their minds. The whole point of this channel for the last 2 years has been to get people ready for that ambiguity and to be prepared for anything, right? And there's going to be shortages of food. There's going to be shortages of water, et cetera. If all this stuff transpires, I'm not saying it's going to transpire. I hope it doesn't. But if it does, it'll be a longer disruption than just an hour or two. And that's what we've been trying to prepare everyone for, is that contingency, whatever that is. And the other thing I don't think we're out of the woods with too, and this. What's interesting too is that the chemtrail thing is getting more airtime, and I'm hoping to see some movement on that too, but we'll see. But you're seeing more and more people paying attention to not just the food situation, but they're paying attention to traffic, they're paying attention to air. And if you were watching today, there was a runway incursion today at O'Hare where a 37 was landing and an aircraft was crossing the runway. Now, runway incursions happen all the time, but the frequency of events that's been happening over the last several months, that's no coincidence. I'm not saying it's a conspiracy, I'm just saying it's no coincidence. There's a lot going on to precipitate this, and we're already seeing people losing their minds about the change in the situation. And I think a lot of it has to do with the shit that they're spraying on us. Because I don't know about the rest of you, but when they spray heavy here, I have headaches. I have a hard time breathing at night. I go outside, instant congestion the moment I walk outside. Was it Midway? Okay, yeah, that's right. Because they fly into Midway. They don't fly into O'Hare. They fly into the mud holes. Forgot it was Southwest. My bad. Thanks for the correction on that. I forgot about Midway. God, that's a shithole too. What an absolute shithole. It's not as bad as Newark, but it's pretty bad. I've only flown in there a couple of times. But yeah, I try not to fly into Chicago because every time I go in there, it's always a shit show trying to get out of there. But anyway, where I was going with all this is they're building narratives for some kind of an event. And there's been several narratives about the terror cells. So be ready for anything. I think we're in a more dangerous time right now than any other time in our history, for the simple reason that most people are situationally unaware. They're just not paying attention. And I knew as soon as Trump came back to office, a bunch of people, you know, a big portion of our population would go back to sleep. And that's exactly what they did. Right back to sleep. Everything's awesome. Trump's coming back. Energy's coming back. We'll go back to the way things were. Life's going to be awesome. I could tell you that that's not the way it's going to go. It's going to be even, there's going to be hardship for everybody. Whichever way it goes, now's the time to prepare. Take time to pause. But here's the thing I would recommend. And this is something that I was reminded of just today. You know, the health of our nation should draw pause for everybody, but it should also be a reminder that all of us have a finite amount of time. So use the time we have now to tell people, you know, how you feel about them, remind people in your family you care, and be present. Because if things go the way that they're saying they're going to go, or the way the narratives are depicting they're going to go, which I hope they don't, then you may not get that second chance. And that's the one thing that none of us have enough of, is time. So take that for what it's worth. And somebody asked me about t-shirts. In the show notes for every show is the Spreadshop t-shirts. And by the way, in May and June, I'm going to move those in-house and start doing in-house with a limited set of options for a couple of reasons. The biggest one is continuity. So if you got recommendations for what you think we should carry, let me know, especially favorite stuff from the Spreadshop storefront. I did end up selling some firearms last week, so thanks to the folks that reached out. If you're interested in inventory, you can reach out to me through republicarmament.com. I answer that email almost every day. And here's what I'll tell you about the firearms market right now. You're seeing ammo coming down in price. You're seeing firearms staying pretty flat. So if you're going to buy ammo, now's the time to do it. I think if you're going to buy replenish things, now's the time to do that too. As well as I'll be posting more updates to Substack over the next several weeks. I'm going to actually start doing a weekly blog post. So a written blog post versus a voice note, just to get some things down on paper. And I'm going to be doing a show with Mike Ferris probably the next week. And there's something else. Can't remember what it is. I had a bunch of notes, left them in the other room, of course. Last but not least, the topic of another meet and greet came up. I'm going to probably be in Seattle in the next several weeks. So if you're in the Seattle area, somewhere in the next 6 weeks, you could see a meet and greet in Seattle. And then I'm supposed to go to Florida sometime this spring or summer. So stay tuned. I think that's the big stuff. Yeah, it's pretty much the big stuff. Yeah, EM's on the game, is on the list. Deegan, the thing with doing shows with these guys is just a matter. It's time, right? It's trying to find the time. Right now, I'm decisively engaged. So in a couple of weeks, when I get the situation with my family under control, then I'll be able to devote more attention to the show. You ask Mike Ferris. I mean, one of the topics we talked today was that this is a grind. To do this full time is a grind. He does it full time. I don't do it full time. Right. I still have a day job and a business that I'm trying to build. And yeah, got a lot going on there. Anyway, I'm rambling now. I'll wrap this up. Appreciate all the feedback, by the way. I did get a lot of feedback over the weekend, so I appreciate all the feedback.
Not sure if I'll be back tomorrow night, but I'll be back Thursday earlier, probably 3 o'clock Pacific and 6 o'clock Eastern. Not sure if we're doing a roundtable yet. Depends on how all this goes over the next couple of days. I am flying tomorrow, actually transitioning to high performance. So I'm going to be decisively engaged with that while I'm doing all this other shit. So it is what it is. One of my goals for the year was to get high performance and to get back in instrument flying. So yeah, I'm still on the fence about instrument though. You know how that goes. Got to go do the missed approaches, do the flying. I just want to go fly. Anyway, should be back Thursday. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.